Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Welcome to Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Kicking off this morning's festivities on Fantasy Sports Today. Excited to have you here. So we're going to be here for the next 3 hours, myself and Kevin Walsh. We're going to take you around the world of sports. We'll hit it from a lot of different angles. There's tons to talk about. You know, it's interesting because you usually have those kind of dog days. And for fantasy sports people like myself and sports people like myself, there's usually a little bit around right after the Super Bowl. And then in May, you don't have as much going on. The NFL draft happens, and then you have a little bit of a lull. But, you know, you always have the NBA playoffs to kind of pick you up. And then this year, we had the U.S. Open, which I actually went to last week and we talked about. And this year, obviously, we have the World Cup. So we went right from the NBA playoffs right into the U.S. Open and right into a disappointing NBA Finals and right into the U.S. Open and the World Cup. And before you know it, it's going to be July next week. And we'll be talking tons and tons of football. So for those of you getting the itch, I'm involved in a mock draft right now for the Scott Fishbowl League. We'll break that down a little bit later. And we're going to be doing a lot of NBA draft stuff this morning as well. We'll do it mostly an hour or two, but I do want to start the show there. I'd love to start at the World Cup because there's an absolutely wild match going on right now, but we'll save that for a little bit later in the hour. Romelu Lukaku scoring a couple of goals this morning for Belgium, who is just a nasty offensive team in the World Cup and can challenge anybody on that side of the pitch. So what I did want to start out with, though, Kevin Walsh, first of all, let's say good morning to you. How are you, bud?
I'm doing great. I'm currently on a little bit of a Beatles bender because I don't know if you saw the James Corden and Paul McCartney carpool karaoke. I don't know your thoughts on the Beatles, but...
I did not see it.
It's fantastic. If you like the Beatles at all, if you don't like the Beatles at all, if you're like our producer, Rob Bowe, who doesn't like James Corden,
what kind of person do you think I am that I would say I don't like the Beatles?
Listen.
Who would say that?
I don't know who would say it, but I'm sure some have. I've yet to hear a bad song from the Beatles. Still, I've not gone through the entire catalog.
I'm sure you could find one.
Just saying. It's,
well,
it's
I'm just
stuff.
Encouraged that you're much younger than me and you're into it. So I'm obviously older and I think it just, I have to like the Beatles. I'm sure there's people out there who think they're overrated, but nobody would say that the Beatles stink or just can't deal with their music. So I do, my wife loves carpool karaoke. So I usually watch a bunch of those with her. It's been a while since I've seen any of those. I think it's a good bit and I will check out the Paul McCartney one. So
make a point to watch.
I will. So thanks for kicking off the show with a little musical
no
information,
problem.
But what I did want to get back to was the NBA draft and Luka versus Trey, I think is going to be the story of this draft. I think amongst all the stories, that's the one that rose to the top. I thought as soon as Luka Doncic for the uninitiated, as soon as he got drafted by the Hawks, I just thought that they were going to move him. I didn't think that was the place where he was going to stay. And sure enough, a couple of picks later, we find out that Trey Young was the pick for Dallas at 5. They swap, plus Atlanta gets the 2019 number one pick. Is that correct?
Yeah, first round pick, but it's protected if it lands within the top 5.
Top 5. Wasn't sure if it was top 5 or top 8. So top 5 protected, and it's basically Luka versus Trey Young and then this additional draft pick. So I guess you could argue that it's going to work out for both teams. I mean, that is pretty darn good value for Atlanta, who is probably going to move on from Dennis Schroeder, which there's been tons of rumors that they wanted to move on from him anyway. He's not happy with the team. He's talking about destinations, despite the fact that he's where he'd like to be, despite the fact that he's currently under contract. I think they're obviously going to make a move there once the trade embargo or trade deadline or the new league year begins and free agency begins and these trades can become official. I'm sure they'll shop for a good destination for him. So anyway, that's where we are. So I'll let you judge it first. What did you think, Luka or Trey?
I don't know if you noticed on the night of the draft, though, my Twitter name was Trey Doncic. I'm a big fan of both of these players. They were 1A, 1B, and to me, it came down to the situation. And that's what I kind of like about the situation for both players. If you told me who I would take if I was the Hawks, I would have taken Trae Young because they clearly wanted him. They were going to be moving on from Dennis Schroeder. And I think that can work well. I think that the pick and roll with John Collins and playing a little bit off of Torian Prince Jr. can all work for him nicely. But I don't think that Trae Young would have been able to work in Dallas, right? Because Dennis Smith Jr. is a pure one in terms of position, not a pure point guard, but in terms of where he has to play based on size and things of that nature. So I think a player like Doncic going there is absolutely perfect, though, because their styles will complement each other, with Doncic looking to create for others primarily, and then Dennis Smith Jr. Being allowed to use his athleticism and scoring prowess to get to the basket. So I love that for both sides. And I do think that a lot of people who cover the draft closely, follow the draft closely, felt that Doncic was possibly a tier ahead of Trae Young. I'm not one who thinks that, but I understand why a lot of people think that. The fact that, I mean, one of these guys is, you know, probably 50, 60 pounds heavier and has, you know, at least 5 inches on him in height, that can kind of make the difference there. The worst case for Dallas is that they would end up giving up next year's 6th overall pick. That's the worst case. But this is a team, and I know you have it within the rundown, and I don't know if I'm jumping ahead too far, but they are going to be aggressive in free agency to where maybe if Doncic hits and Dennis Smith Jr. progresses and Rick Carlisle kind of holds up a little bit stronger to the claim that he is a top five coach, and he's been in a poor situation. I'm just saying recently the results haven't been that of a top five coach, and they pull one big name in free agency with maybe one nice other piece, then maybe the pick's not even in the lottery, and you do that 10 times out of 10.
Agreed. You know, and it's not to say that outside a lottery pick can't be a valuable pick. We're going to be breaking down guys that were in and outside the lottery later in hour number two, and we'll have a guest in there, Coles Wicker from the Stepien. He'll be helping us to break down some of this draft and his grades and his thoughts on that entire process as well, that what happened Thursday night. So, you know, there were a couple of big trades the other night. That's obviously the most highlighted one. But what I do think is interesting is that sometimes you feel like teams get fleeced during trades, and it may end up being the case a couple of years down the line. But I feel like in the moment, I think Atlanta did a nice job extracting value out of that. You and I could sit here and say, well, Luka Doncic is a better player. They should just keep him. But at the same time, they saw a need because they were going to move on from their point guard. They matched up with a team, and they were able to get good value. Say, even if that pick is 16 next year, just, you know, ballpark. Say Dallas, you know, sneaks into the playoffs last year. Next year, they're 7 or 8 seed in the West, and that pick is somewhere in the mid-teens. That's not so bad, by the way. You've got Luka Doncic, you've got Trae Young, then you're going to have whatever other pick that you're going to be, which is, let's be honest, probably a lottery pick, and then one outside the lottery pick. And I think that's okay. I think you're all good. You're going to have Trae Young plus a top 10 pick next year. Let's just say they're bottom 10 in the league, right? Mm-hmm. And then you might have another one in the mid-teens, and that's okay. Maybe if you're not the worst team, you package those to move up for whomever it might be. You know, we're a long way away from that. You obviously got guys that we mentioned last week, a couple of Duke players and some other guys that are going to be hot prospects coming a year from now. So I think it's all good. I don't think Dallas can complain about giving up that pick. They got a guy that they want, Dennis Smith, Luka Doncic, moving on, right? They're upward and onward as they move out of the Dirk Nowitzki era. They got a couple of young guys that I think people are happy about. Dennis Smith, the returns on him were good this year, and now they got a guy that's a wing, a scorer, and hopefully he can adjust quickly to the rigors of the NBA season. That's my biggest concern, frankly, with Trae Young. It's not that he can't score. Obviously, the guy knows how to get his own shot. He was a distributor. Yes, he was a bit of a ball hog at times, but that was a tough scenario in Oklahoma. He didn't have a lot around him. Look, he does play a style that fits in with the modern NBA. I do have questions about how durable he can be. It's not like he was injured all this year, like we saw with, for example, Kyrie Irving as a young player, hurt constantly. It's just that he's very small. He's 6'2". He's probably 175, if I had to guess. And I think that would take its toll on him. It's not like he's going to be trying to post guys up or drive to the hole a la Dwayne Wade when he was a younger player, but... I do have questions about that. So I would have gone with Luka versus Trae Young just based on that. The other concern for Trae Young is that people are naturally going to make the Steph Curry comparison. I back away from predictions that fall in line with him having to be comparable to the greatest shooter in the history of the league and the guy that maybe gets his shot off quicker than anybody in the history of basketball. So... there's only one of him. I'm not saying he can't be in that class, but I doubt it. So those are my concerns with Trae Young and why I would have gone with Luka. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that totally makes sense. And that's part of the problem, right? So I say 1A, 1B. The reality is, though, like Doncic is, there was no team where he wasn't a fit. Like if you have to play him at the 1, the 2, the 3, he has the size and the skill set to make all of that work. As to where Trae does have to be the one because of his size. So I think that all of that fits. I did want to ask you about another asset that was moved just because we were talking about it, because I don't know if we'll get into kind of the actual asset that was moved more so because we saw the Suns and the Sixers make the Mikal Bridges and Zaire Smith trade and all of that stuff. But I thought that it was very interesting that the Suns were willing to give up that 2021 Miami Heat pick, because we spoke about this last week,
yes.
The fact that 2021's NBA draft could be the first year that high school prospects are available. And the Suns, I mean, they're trying to shift their timeline. They do not want to be in the bottom five next year. I mean, they don't want to be in the lottery next year, right? So that's why they're willing to give up an asset like that. But I thought it was, I mean, quite frankly, I don't understand how Philly had what I thought at least was a nice draft without any GM. And it definitely, to me, felt noteworthy that they grabbed that pick. I did say last week I thought it would be more likely that the 2022 NBA draft could start it because of the fact that there are still picks out there not owned by their respective teams for the 2021 NBA draft. But I do think that that was something of note, because I think that the picks in that year's draft, right, like we're going to see more of those moved as we perhaps get into this offseason or trade deadline talks and things of that nature. And I'm wondering how willing teams are going to be able to move them or how valuable those picks will look to the rest of the league.
Yeah, we will break it down later. But suffice to say, I thought, despite the fact that Philly's probably getting the best athlete in the draft in Zaire Smith, they did give up a lot. Mm. They gave up Mikal Bridges, and a pick that could be very valuable. So it's another case of, you know, of the two highlighted trades, the two biggest trades that we saw the other night, the one we just spoke about and the one we're speaking about now, I do think that it actually should work out for both teams. Do you know what I mean? Philly did give up a lot to get what they feel like is the best player in the draft and a better complementary piece than Bridges might have been, despite his mom working for the team for nearly four decades.
How heartbreaking must
which
that
had to
have been
be somewhat
disappointing.
Yeah, apparently, they did call her to give her a heads up after the fact, because it seems like he was really excited to be there, and then he got moved out to Phoenix. But you know, might be better for him in the long run. So let's put a cap, let's put a bow on the NBA stuff for now, because we're going to talk about it in the entire second hour. We got baseball coming up. A very big story, obviously, in the sports world is the fact that Jameis Winston is staring down a 3-game suspension. We are going to break that down in hour number 3, but suffice to say, a franchise quarterback picked number 1 overall, the Bucks are looking at a brutal start to the season schedule-wise. And Jameis hasn't quite reached the levels that we've wanted him to reach, nor the Bucks wanted him to reach, and now he's got this hanging over his head. It's tough for fantasy. It's tough for fantasy reasons, but considering the allegations that are involved, more serious allegations lobbied Jameis Winston's way.
I mean, I saw someone who covers the Bucks site, and it's kind of something that crossed my mind. And I look, we're going to get into the implications for the Bucks team this year, fantasy, what the outcome could be. One of the outcomes that really could be in play is Jameis could be done. I mean, this is not his first incredibly messy incident. I think that it is, at the moment, it perhaps is a little cloudy as to what exactly happened. There's a number of details that are seeming to be skewed from the two sides, but He is kind of at a point, right, where the benefit of the doubt is likely not on his side. And maybe there is a chance that Jameis could be out of this league sooner than later.
Yeah, it's we talked about it a couple of months back, looking at the quarterbacks that may be on the hot seat in the long term. And I think Jameis is going to be one of those. I promise we'll talk about him in hour 3. We're going to come back, talk about some baseball recaps from last night. It's Mike Blewett and Kevin Walsh. We're on Fantasy Sports Radio Network on FST. Come join us after the break.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Appreciate all the Beatles music. Are we doing like a full Beatles day? I'm good with that.
I'm very good with that.
Producing the show. Yeah, Rob Bowe and Sean Engel producing today. So good musical choices coming out of the gate. So thanks for joining us on FST. If you want to reach out to us today, please do so on Twitter. We'll put some polls up, Luca versus Trey, all that kind of stuff. But reach out to us on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett, BLEWITT. And Kevin is at The Kevin Walsh. If you want to call us, please do so. 844-843-6879. We'll take calls on the NBA. We're going to have guest Cole Zwicker coming up at 10:40 Eastern time. He writes for the Step In, and again, he's going to give us his grades, his thoughts. We got a lot of questions for him. We could spend more than 20 minutes with him, but we're only going to have those 16, 17 minute segments in order to do it. So feel free to give us a call about any of that kind of stuff. Like I said, I'm in the middle of some mock drafts. I'm writing some articles right now and trying to break down offensive lines and all that kind of stuff. It's a beast of an article to do. So apologies for not having it done yet, but I'll get there. So, and however you found us this morning, thanks for finding us. Fantasy Sports Radio Network app, which is free to download, free to listen. Just go to iTunes or Google Play. And if it's through the TuneIn app or iHeartRadio, thank you. Appreciate it. So, on to baseball. So, look, there's all this stuff swirling around. I'm watching. There's a blowout of a soccer match going on. Obviously, we have the football news, which you touched on. The NBA draft stuff was Thursday night. Got together with some of the people from the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It was a little bit of a bowling outing, and we watched some of the draft together there. So, in any event, I was watching baseball last night. You know, a lot of times when I'm prepping for the show, like, that's what I'm going to watch. That's what's on late at night. I'm catching games. I got the MLB Network on, and I'm just kind of flipping back and forth. If the Yankees end, I'm going over to MLB Network and seeing some live look-ins. And there were some crazy, crazy games last night. So let me do the first one that I wanted to do, which was the Brewers. Let me get to that box score. And that was interesting in that it was a 2-1 final. The Brewers scored two runs on two solo Jesus Aguilar home runs. And he's a guy that has been a fantasy star this year. He's hitting .305 right now. Last night, two more solo homers. That brings him to the number 13. What is that? How many? 16 on the season. So 49 ribbies right now. 366 on base. Nearly 975 OPS right now. So Aguiar really just kind of carrying that team. As good as Christian Yelich and Lorenzo Cain have been, Aguiar is a guy that's really putting up some big numbers for them. So for those of you that drafted him, I think you're very pleased with the results thus far. He's the only – they only had three hits. I mean, it was a pitcher's duel last night. Guerra starts for Milwaukee. He goes five strong with seven strikeouts. Then their bullpen, which is nasty, went perfect. They threw four perfect innings. No walks, no hits. They struck out Hader, obviously, a perfect inning. Three up, three down, all by strikeout. Barnes with two strikeouts. Jeffers, two strikeouts. And then Knebel gets the win, one inning with a strikeout. Flaherty throws for St. Louis. I think he had a perfect game going through five and then gave up a solo home run to Aguiar. So he goes seven innings, 13 strikeouts for Flaherty. Only gives up the one earned run on the solo shot and the only hit he gave up. And then Hicks comes in. He throws an inning without giving up a run. And then Bud Norris comes in, gets an out, and then boom, Aguiar. Long ball. So pretty crazy game in that there was nothing going on from the Brewers at all except for Aguiar's two home runs. But he's a guy that's delivered so far this season, Kev.
As 16 home runs this season in his 337 at-bats. Prior to this year, he has 16 home runs. So for him to match his career total in just the 65 games that he's played thus far, yeah, I think you'd be pretty happy with that kind of return. It is sort of out of nowhere, but I think probably more in, is it fair to say more in baseball than any other of the main fantasy sports that which we play? You have kind of these guys that just up out of nowhere and give you this kind of production?
Yeah, and look, I think we've seen that more in recent history as well because guys are working on changing launch angles and things of that nature. Now, could this be an anomaly where he goes back and is not hitting as many homers? Yeah, but considering his size and considering the manner in which he's doing it now, one could presume that this power surge will continue. He's 27 years old. He may be just coming into his prime. So based on those factors, yes, he played 133 games last year. He only hit 16 homers, and he hit .265 last year. Prior to that, he hadn't really played much in the majors. He'd been up, you know, September call-up for 3 years running, not really enough at-bats to make anything of it. But, you know, last year, he had an .837 OPS. Obviously, he had a whole bunch of extra base hits, but this is certainly a power surge that, as you said, is probably unexpected, certainly at this level. But with the hitters hitting in front of him, like Cain and Yelich and Shaw, I think you might expect something like this to continue. He's not like a sell-high kind of guy to me. I think he's somebody you're going to be hanging on to because you're staring down 30 homers at a minimum at this point, but good production out of him. So not too much going else on in that game, but it was something that was just a lot of fun. Plus he's like, they're hamming it up. You know, the Brewers, Dan Plesac said it last night, the Brewers are going to be scary if they get to the playoffs because the bullpen is so good. Last night was indicative of it. They threw four perfect innings, but with their bullpen, they would be dangerous in the postseason. They obviously got guys like Nelson on the front end that can provide something, but you don't want to play them in a, you know, in a winner goes home kind of game with that kind of depth in the bullpen, or in a series, frankly, with that kind of depth in the bullpen. So, good stuff there out of the Brewers. Another crazy game last night was Orioles Braves. So they're doing a live look in. The game was, I want to make sure I have it right. It was 3-1 Braves going into the ninth inning. Yeah, it's 3-1 Braves. The Braves had scored three runs in the seventh and eighth to go up 3-1 on the Orioles. The Orioles score six in the top of the ninth. And then you're like, all right, we're good to go. We're up 7-3. Orioles are going to pack it in. We got Zach Britton coming in here. We're going to be good to go. And I watched them absolutely disintegrate. And Zach Britton absolutely disintegrate as well. He goes a third of an inning, gives up four, and the Braves sent someone home on the potentially game-winning hit, Freddie Freeman, actually. So Freddie Freeman came lumbering towards home, and Jonathan Scope threw an absolute laser beam of a relay throw to get him out, and they tied it. So they came from behind. Despite winning going into the ninth inning, they were down 7-3. They score four in the bottom of the ninth, so 10 runs are scored in the ninth inning alone. Thankfully, I went to bed not long after that, but they went up, they ended up winning. The Orioles won in 15 innings, 10-7. So that should be a fun game to play today after going through that nonsense. But Ozzie Albies goes 2-for-7. He's two runs scored. Freddie Freeman, 2-for-7. Two RBIs. Albies had an RBI as well. Nick Markakis, 2-for-6. Culberson, 1-for-4 with two ribbies. Camargo, 2-for-6 with an RBI. Homers, none there. On the Orioles side of the ball, Chris Davis actually back into the starting lineup. He hits a home run, his 50th of the year. Manny Machado hit his 19th of the year. And down the line, 2-for-5 for Machado with the two ribbies, 2-for-6 for Gentry, 2-for-3 for Valencia, 2-for-7 Jonathan Scope. Joseph goes 2-for-5. As far as pitching is concerned, Zach Britton was a bloodbath. That was a disaster. Newcomb goes 7 strong for Atlanta. No decision, only one earned run. So they blow the save on him. Winkler blew the save for that. They used like 8 pitchers in Atlanta last night. But it's just a super fun game to watch in the ninth inning. I happened to tune in right when they were about to do a live look-in. So a lot of offense obviously scooped up there. But Zach Britton, he's a guy that was a lockdown top three closer a couple of years ago. I'm going to take a look at some of his game logs, but it was a rough outing for him last night.
Well, yeah, part of the – something that I kind of saw yesterday, and I don't know why it was really the first time that it dawned on me, I guess because the idea of Manny Machado being moved is so alluring that I kind of link all of these struggles for the Baltimore Orioles, who are 30 games under 500 already, 22-52, to the idea of Manny Machado going to a new team. But I am interested in where Adam Jones could go as well. But even to your point of Zach Britton, I believe it was 2 weeks ago when I was doing the show with George, and we were talking about Britton coming back, and he was like, they'll probably take their time, but they do want to get him out there and show him off and hopefully get a similar production, because he'll be moved too.
Yeah, to be fair, look, he's only thrown 4 2/3 innings. As you said, he was injured. He just came back 12 days ago. So June 12th was his first appearance. He had 4 1/3 of only one hit, one. He gave up a few walks, but he had given up a run in the four previous outings. Last night, he got blown up. That's going to happen to closers from time to time. You just hope he can wipe it away and move on to the next one. To your point, they're going to try to get some value for him, and if he's getting destroyed out there, it's going to kill his value over the next 30 days. But it's one outing. He just looked terrible. He couldn't get the ball past anybody last night, and he found themselves in that position. So, so there you go. So next game I was going to talk about was Red Sox Mariners. And what's interesting is that I was listening to Craig Carton. You can listen to him on weekdays from 9 to 12 here on FNTSY. He was talking about the Mariners, how they just got swept by the Yankees, a brutal loss on Wednesday night to come from behind. Then they lose the Thursday getaway game, which he thought the Yanks were just not going to come back after the emotional win on Wednesday night and take another one, but they did. He was saying his supposition was that the Mariners are going to be so thrilled to go to Boston that they're going to put up a big number on the Sox. And he really liked them. If you were, you know, playing a little bit of baseball, last night was a night to jump on the Mariners. And honestly, his theory was pretty sound, except for the fact that the Mariners didn't pitch last night because it was a 14-10 slugfest in Boston. LeBlanc goes 4 2/3. He gives up 11 hits and 6 runs. Nicasio blows the save last night. He's had a Zach Britton outing. He gave up 5 earned runs in a third of an inning. The Sox scored 5. They scored 9 runs in the 5th, 6th, and 7th innings. They scored 5 in the 7th. So a come-from-behind win for the Sox. Wright goes 3 1/3. He gave up 10 earned runs. How about that? How about Stephen Wright? I know Stephen Wright as the comedian more than I know him as the baseball player. That's obviously a different Stephen Wright, but I'm just saying, that's brutal. He got left out there. He was on the hook for 10 earned runs, Kevin Walsh.
A lot of runs. A lot of runs to be on the hook.
Yeah.
Oh, Jacob DeGrom honestly needs to go to a new team. It's not fair.
Where did that come from?
It's just, think about this, though. Like, the guys that give up these type of runs, like, they can end up with no decisions and things of that nature. Grom goes 7 yes. scoreless. Loss. What? How did they even have you lose? He didn't give up a run. Yeah. Still loss.
Yeah. So. Let me recap. Yeah, you're right. Look, Stephen Wright is off the hook in a game where he gave up 10 earned runs. And Jacob DeGrom, I think, had a 0.76 ERA in the month of May, and the Mets won one of those games. Mookie Betts goes 1 for 4 last night, 2 runs scored. Benintendi, 2 for, I'm glad I'm entertaining you, 2 for 4, 3 runs scored in RBI. JD Martinez, how about this guy? 4 for 5 last night, 3 runs, 5 ribbies, hitting .324 and an OPS 1.037. He's challenging Mookie Betts right now for OPS lead in the American League. Mitch Moreland, he goes 3 for 5, 3 runs scored and a ribby. Everybody had RBIs last night. Everybody except the DH, Swihart, had an RBI last night for the Sox. Oh, Mookie Betts actually didn't have one either. Mitch Moreland, RBI. Bogarts, 1 for 4, an RBI. Brock Holt, 2 for 5 with an RBI. And Rafael Devers, 3 for 5 with 2 ribbies. I've heard his name bandied about in some trade talk recently. JD Martinez did hit a home run, his 23rd. So this MVP talk, I mean, it's going to be an interesting race in the American League because you have two guys on the Sox, JD Martinez and Mookie Betts, that have been off the charts good. Betts still hitting .342, by the way. You've got the Yankees. Look, by the end of it, Judge and Stanton are going to have over 40 homers, and Judge might be hitting .290, and gosh knows how many RBIs he'll have.
Did you see?
Not to mention Gleyber Torres has just, you know, been tearing it up since he got up here. But there'll be other guys too. But what I think my greater point is that a lot of times players quote unquote steal votes from one another, so it might be tough for somebody, for one of the two guys on the Sox, to distance themselves, right? Especially if the Yankees are in first place.
Well, I was just going to throw in there quickly to your point. Matt Modica of this network, the brilliant Matt Modica, tweeted out that on June 20th, Stanton was at 18 home runs, and last year he on June 20th was at 18 home runs. So a surge from him can certainly be coming. I do personally still think the fact that Mike Trout is on pace for the best or the second best WAR season of all time. I mean, the fact that I understand that people do not want to live and die by WAR. I get that. The fact that he is at 6.6 and the next closest person is at 5 it's unprecedented stuff. And like, I still, if
he's
someone
having the best for a guy that is finished in the top 5 of MVP voting in all of his 6 seasons, to have this be his best start, I think says a lot So, yeah, we can talk a little bit more about him after the break as well. But certainly,
didn't
Trout
he get
is
off to
be
a
the
slow
guy that's
start?
Up there for the MVP. He's not he's not historically a great starter. He's a great player, and his seasons stack up, but he doesn't usually come out of the gate hot, mm-hmm. leading the league in home runs in April and May and now June. It's not been his MO. By the end of the year, his numbers stack up with anybody's, even though he doesn't necessarily lead the league in home runs. It's good across the board, obviously. So that's the deal. He'll be one of the guys as well. Nelson Cruz with two home runs last night. He had seven RBIs last night in a 4-for-5 game. So that's it. We'll come back and talk World Cup after this.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Welcome to the Beatles edition of FST this morning.
Our best episode ever.
Yeah, so we're talking baseball. We're going to do World Cup here in a second. I want to get back to baseball before we go to the World Cup, and I'll explain why. Who wants to go to a 2018 World Series game? Tune into the Fantasy Sports Radio Network between July 8th and July 17th, so just a couple of weeks away, as we'll be playing the DKMS Trivia Challenge for your shot to call in with a chance to attend the Fall Classic in person. The number to play is 844-843-6879. That's 844-843-FNTSY. The contest is sponsored by DKMS, who are looking for your help in the fight against blood cancer. For many patients, a bone marrow transplant is the best chance for survival. While 30% of the patients can find a matching donor in their families, 70%, nearly 14,000 each year, must rely on a benevolent stranger to step up and donate. Find out how you can help the cause and go to dailyroto.com/DKMS. That's dailyroto.com/DKMS. It's the DKMS Trivia Challenge, July 8th through July 17th. Call in and win. Just to do the number again, it's 844-843-6879, 844-84-FNTSY. There's an extra number in there. We got to give Mike Cardano. Mike Cardano is writing these things up. I got to give him a hard time about that. He's going to have people reading the wrong phone number. So one player that I did want to talk about, we didn't get to. So the D-backs Pirates went 13 last night. Nobody scored until the 11th inning. But Patrick Corbin was on the right side of that line as the Diamondbacks do win 2-1. Not a lot of hits all the way around. But I mentioned Patrick Corbin because he's been rumored a lot and a guy that's potentially going to get moved. People are linking him to the Yankees right now. The irony is that the Diamondbacks are 9 games over .500. And yeah, he's a free agent at the end of the year, but the Diamondbacks don't have to punt. They do not. They are not that kind of team right now. And if they are 9 games over .500, let's say they play .500 ball for the next month, why would they do that? Do you know what I mean? I don't see them moving him right now.
No, I mean,
contract situations and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, someone would have to come with a nice offer to pull him away. I do think that if a team like the Yankees call, I feel like they could end up almost setting the market with some of this stuff, right? Like if you're a team that has a pitcher that is going to be coveted by the contenders, you have to listen, I would think, to the Yankees first, because I'm not sure how many other teams that will be making the phone call can offer you anything better. And if you are a team that then doesn't end up getting, you know, the offer from the Yankees, if they go a different direction, you can still kind of use the price that whichever they pay to hopefully set yourselves up to get a big return.
Yeah, and I think it was telling that Cashman had to come out in the last week and say, we're not trading Torres, because I think it's obvious that anybody that's willing to deal anybody worth that has legitimate value is going to ask for him first.
Yeah.
And the Yankees are just at a point where they're not going to give him up. I don't think they really want to give up Andujar either, but I think they can part with him because they may have some long-term plans that include players like Manny Machado that can move on from somebody like Andujar. But right now, I mean, for a while, those guys have been not carrying the team, but they've been big contributors even at their young ages. So, yeah, right now, they're 2.5 games in front of the Dodgers, the Diamondbacks are. They would be in the wild card race. Yeah, they'd be, yeah. Look, if the Dodgers, say, overtook them right now, they'd be a wild card team, too. So they have a top record in the league, and, you know, they'll be there fighting for a wild card with the Cubs and the Brewers and Phillies and Braves and Nationals. And that'll be the crew, most likely, fighting for those divisional and wild card titles. So that's it. Patrick Corbin, another good outing. He's from New York originally. I think that's why you hear some of that stuff. He may have grown up a Yankees fan. He's from Syracuse.
He said he wanted to be a Yankee.
Yeah, I think he was. I think he grew up a Yankees fan because he's from Syracuse. So he is 28. He'll be 29 next month. So you get a few years out of a guy like that, and he'll be a free agent. So I'm sure he'd like to, if the Diamondbacks somehow fell apart, I'm sure he wouldn't mind being a Yankee rental. But I think those are the guys that the Yankees are looking at. You know, J.A. Happ and Cole Hamels. They're not going to be in the DeGrom or Syndergaard mix. Not suggesting that either of those guys get traded, but I think they're going to listen on DeGrom. The Mets, we're here in New York. Kevin and I are here in New York, and it's become a circus now because they're playing so badly. The crazy part is they're not that – I mean, they're actually now 11 games below 500. They're 11 and a half games out. They're 9 games out of the wild card. It's only June 23rd. They started the season 11-1. So you can do the math. They're 20-41 in their last 60. That's rough. Think about that. In their last 60 games, Kevin, they're 20-41.
Really bad.
So when people say, you know, they're not that far off, they got on a hot streak, I mean, they're playing 333 baseball for 2 months. That's really bad. That's amongst the worst teams in the league. The only team, you know, the AL Central is a disaster because they have the Sox and White Sox and Kansas City, Miami. Those are the only teams. Those three teams I mentioned are the only teams with less wins than the New York Mets in all of Major League Baseball. So, Baltimore, too. So Mets are bottom five in wins in Major League Baseball. That's why you're hearing all the DeGrom stuff. I think it's become a comedy routine because Sandy Alderson is holding press conferences saying, he thinks they're right in the middle. Maybe they'll listen, maybe they won't. We'll see how it is. Cespedes isn't coming back. You know, he doesn't seem to want to come back anytime soon. But here we are. So I don't think the Yankees will be in the mix for that. I don't think the Mets will make a trade with the Yankees. Certainly not of that ilk. But I think the Yankees will be in that spot. You know, J.A. Happ, Cole Hamels, mm-hmm. something where they have to give up some, but not give up a ton. They have guys that they can give up. They have a lot of pitchers in their top 10 prospects, not to mention Esteban Florial, another outfielder, Clint Frazier, a guy that they can't even really get on the field. And then Andujar and Torres, obviously, on the major league team. The Yankees could stand pat, but we all know that they need a pitcher for October. That's really what this is for. I think they're going to cruise to 100 games in the regular season because they're going to start hitting home runs at an even greater pace than they have to this point. So That's it for baseball. I wanted to just talk about the Patrick Corbin thing because he had such a good outing last night. So World Cup, it's going on right now. I would have bet that they were going to put on a show today, and Belgium is up 4-1 over Tunisia, and it could easily be 7-1 because they've had chance after chance after chance, and Tunisia can't do anything about it. They went up 2-0 pretty quick. Tunisia came back with a nice set-piece goal. And they have been pounding him since. Romelu Lukaku is now tied with Cristiano Ronaldo for four goals in the tournament. And he easily could have had another one, and they've already subbed him out. He got subbed out, and I think in the 49th or 50th minute, because they knew, and it's pouring rain too. So they knew that they were good to go. They had this game in the bag, and they're going to rest him. They might even rest him for their third game of the group, of the group stage right here too, Kev.
Their keeper has let four goals past him. He has seven saves. He's probably done pretty well considering what he's been asked to do. I was kind of thinking of all of the favorites, right? Of all the top teams in this tournament, I think it's fair to say that Belgium has been the most impressive to this point, right? Like Brazil, they drew against Switzerland. The two goals that they put past Costa Rica both came past stoppage time. Spain has been not super inspiring, right? You would have expected them to look much better against Iran. I think Belgium just scored again. I don't have my glasses on, but it looks like they just scored another goal.
Yeah. They did.
Okay, so that's now five.
Like I said, it could easily be seven. This is an onslaught. I mean, Belgium has extremely. That was a great pass and a great goal. That was unbelievable. That is what Belgium does. They have insanely, insanely talented goal scorers on this team.
Or do.
And one of them is not even on the pitch right now because they're winning by so much. So, yeah, that was crazy. The Tunisian goalie should just, I'd just tap out, just bring in the backup. I wouldn't want to withstand this anymore. So, I think you're right. Now, we could talk about the level of competition in that group. They beat Panama 3-0 to open it up, right? And now here they are. It's 5-1 in the... That's the 90th minute. So Tunisia's going to be out of their misery soon. I think they can just – what was that?
Couldn't tell you. Don't know even what you're talking about.
So, no, I'm sorry. I'm getting distracted by – actually, this is why I try not to watch games while I'm on the radio because I get distracted. Tunisia after – Belgium scored their fifth goal. You know, Tunisia goes to the center line to just tap back in and start play. And the guy fired it over the goal.
Hmm.
Like he kicked it 50 yards over the opposite goal.
Have a go.
And gave the ball back to Belgium, who nearly scored six. I mean, they are still trying. I think they're just trying to put up a big number so they can just feel safe. But right now, they're going to have 8 goals for, 1 goal against, a goal differential of 7. They'll have 2 wins. Tunisia will have 2 losses. Belgium's through. They can do whatever they want in that third game. I'd rest everybody just to make sure people don't get yellow cards or any of that kind of stuff. So I think you may be right. I think they're probably the most impressive so far. I would put actually Russia, despite the fact that you're saying of the favorites, I would put Russia in there as being particularly impressive as well. Obviously, they've put up 8 goals through their 2 games. Uruguay is also in their group. It looks like Russia, Uruguay are moving on. I guess that's clinched already,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they both qualified.
Because the other guys can't even get 1 win. So they both move through. Right now, Belgium is going to probably clinch it here, moving through. France has 2 wins already. I don't know if they're officially clinched, but they're basically through Croatia. So obviously the big surprise thus far is Group D, where there were a lot of people saying that Iceland could be a sleeper and Argentina wasn't going to be guaranteed, although just about everybody picked them anyway. But now what it's looking like is Croatia is going to go through. Nigeria has a win there, and it's going to be Argentina playing Nigeria to see who goes through, plus Iceland potentially challenging Croatia when Croatia doesn't have to win.
Yeah. It's
right. So Croatia can just do what Belgium's doing, park the bus, just get through the 95 minutes and move on to the round of 16. And Argentina is in serious jeopardy. It all started, look, it started with Messi missing that penalty kick. And it was big because they didn't get the win there. And then they got blown out the other day by Croatia. 3-0 loss. And I just think that team's kind of a mess right now. I don't see them rallying to make it to the next round. But you're right. Yeah, I think Belgium, you'd put Belgium at the top of the list right now. I really like them to go far in this tournament. And they're a fun team to watch, too. So they just closed it out. 5-1 win for them. It could have been 7 or 8. So anyway, I talked for a while there. I'll let you comment on it.
So for Argentina, right? I mean, Croatia looked awesome, and Modric has been wonderful, and Rakitic and the whole lot of them. And Argentina as a whole have been very disappointing. But we know the big story is Lionel Messi. And honestly, I don't know how anyone could make any type of argument that this is not probably going to be the most damning part of his legacy. It is one thing to not be able to, you know, get the penalty that would have got you the win against Iceland. It's another thing to have this happen while Cristiano Ronaldo is playing at a level that, I mean, few have ever seen at age 33, joint top goal scorer for the tournament past, you know, as of now. He's literally scored every single goal for Portugal to this point. Messi's yet to score one. The fact that...
You know how many shots he had on goal the other day?
Messi?
Against Croatia in the 3-0 loss? How many shots he had on goal?
Tell me.
Zero.
Yuck. Oh, here and here's the other...
Missed penalty kick, follows it up with zero shots on goal in a 3-0 loss.
And here's the biggest thing, right? Like, I cannot pretend that I have seen enough soccer to stand firmly on one side of the greatest player of all time argument. There are players that I've never seen, so I would never be one to get into that. But I don't know how Messi, on a legacy wise, can really overcome losing in Copa America back-to-back years in the fashion that which he did, retiring as a result of it, having about 5 guys follow suit because he is the captain, deciding to come back. This is the redemption. And before you even get to the third game of the group stage, there's a report that you're going to retire again. It's embarrassing. And I don't really understand how anybody could defend it.
Now, this team, after the Copa America thing, remember, basically the entire team retired unless the coach was removed. They then removed the coach, a whole bunch of players unretired. But the next time Leo plays in a World Cup, he's going to be 34. It's unlikely that he's going to be at the top of his game still. So he can retire, but he might want to follow Cristiano Ronaldo's lead, stay in shape, at least be out there and be a part of it next time. But I think this is frustration talking. If you're talking about retirement in the middle of a tournament, it's usually frustration. It's why you see a lot. And a lot of former players give current players advice. Wait until the season is over. Take some downtime. Decide if you want to keep doing it. You know, Earl Thomas broke his leg. He wanted to immediately retire. Gronkowski right after the Super Bowl. A lot of heavy rumors about him retiring. You get a little bit of space from the event, then you may come back and decide that international play is still in your future. But right now, it's a disaster. It's the story of the tournament. As good as Belgium and Russia have been, Argentina may be missing out on the group stage. The quarters is going to be a disaster. So we'll come back. We're talking NBA in hour number 2. It's Mike Blewett and Kevin Walsh on FST. Join us for hour 2.